You're back with Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hello, friends. We are rolling along on a Tuesday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes behind the glass, as always. A little bit of home run derby action last night. Paul, what were your thoughts on your boy Julio Rodriguez not winning Juan Soto, despite the fact that Julio had more home runs?
Julio Rodriguez is terrifying, and yeah, he should have won that. I don't care that Juan Soto got the final round. It should be the totality. I mean, he had the second most, I guess, home runs in derby history. Vlad Guerrero Jr., I guess, had 91 back in, 2019. But good God, I mean, 81, 82 home runs. It just kept coming and coming and coming. And this kid's 21 years old, and he's in the AL West, and he is going to make the Mariners, at the very least, relevant, which they have not been in quite some time. And you're going to see a lot of him in just a couple of days when the Astros go to take on the Mariners at T-Mobile Park. So I've always been impressed by him ever since I first met him. I felt like there was superstar potential. It obviously all had to come together on the diamond. And yeah, that was his arrival moment for those who at least care about the home run derby, which I do think isn't the greatest of watches. But if you're in person, it's probably a different story.
Yeah, it was cool. To your credit, you have been talking about Julio Rodriguez for a while. I can attest to that. So nice to see a guy get some airwaves. You interviewed him a while back when he was a young buck, even younger than he is now. So cool to see that. Every now and then, somebody, Astros media, somebody covering the Astros, will tweet something that just makes you go, I didn't know that. And that is what happened yesterday. Chandler Rome tweeted about Justin Verlander and his contract situation. Quote, Justin Verlander, let me see. I actually lost the tweet. Talk amongst yourselves.
Guess what? We actually heard from Verlander when asked about a contract. He has an opt-out clause if he pitches a set amount of innings. Right. So if he pitches 130 innings on the year, he actually can opt out of the second year of the two-year deal that he signed with the Astros. So this would mean it could possibly be his last year here. Whoever negotiated it for him, credit to them. It's a very smart clause in case Justin Verlander's not 100% coming back from the Tommy John surgery. But he has been more than that. I mean, he is looking like one of the best pitchers in baseball, like a clear top-of-the-line candidate to win
I've
the American League Cy Young.
I've compared him to your boy. I've compared him to Tom Brady, just obviously not all of the championships, but the fact that he has been able to come off of not only the Tommy John, but he had that really – he had like a rib issue when he came here as well. He's had multiple injuries, and he's been better than ever. The first half of this season, he's been dominant.
And I've been on that page for a bit. I remember, Vanessa, a couple of years ago, he said – that he wants to play until he's 45, and I can only remember one other athlete saying that. It's Tom Brady.
So TB12, your Lord and Savior. Mm-hmm. I did find the tweet from Chandler Rome, and then we'll play the audio. Asked Justin Verlander if the thought of his opt-out and looming decision has started to creep in. Verlander, like you said, Paul, at 109.1 innings pitched, his opt-out triggers when he reaches 130. Here's what he told the media types yesterday.
I mean, of course, it creeps in. I'm human. You never know what the future holds, and you'd like to. But I think one thing that this game has taught me is just like put your head down, work hard, and whatever happens, happens. You know, it's like you can't think about the stuff. You can't think about the what ifs or if nots or whatever. You know, you just do the best you can every 5 days, or 6 days, or on occasion 7 or 8 now. Wherever the chips fall, they may. And you know, I think hopefully this is a year that we can win a championship. And if this is the end of my run with Houston, it's just been nothing short of incredible. And the people and the city and the team and my teammates have been a blessing. If it's not the end, then it's also a blessing.
So
that does not sound committal.
It doesn't. The beginning of that clip, you're like, oh, okay, he's talking around it. But then all of a sudden he says, so if this is my last year, it's been a great time. If it's not, it's also a blessing. So he kind of pulls out of that at the very end. But it makes sense that maybe the Astros would not decide to bring him back given the sheer volume of young pitching that they have and given that he could ask for a lot on the open market. It's going to be really tricky. And look, the Astros, they don't like to get into those massive bidding wars. They got Verlander at a bargain. If they were going to get any iteration of the Verlander we've seen in the past, to have him for 2 years makes a lot of sense. But wouldn't Verlander want, I don't know, 4-5 year deal while he still can earn money, especially if he wants to keep pitching until he is 45 years old? Isn't there going to be another team out there that would offer him that? What does he have to prove anymore? He's won the Cy Young. He's won an MVP, right? I mean, he's won a World Series. He's got nothing left to prove outside of, I want to pitch as long as I possibly can. Someone might decide to offer him, I don't know, say $50 to $60 million a year or something like that over a two-year stretch or something crazy. And why not if you think he's the finishing piece? Don't you feel like there are teams across baseball that are thinking to themselves, we just need one damn good pitcher? Luxury tax be damned. We can deal with it for 1 year. So I wonder, I feel like there's nowhere that you can, I think, read into Verlander's comments and say, oh, this or that is going to happen at the end of the year. But it is interesting to just to think about the fact that he can opt out and someone will offer him a lot. I don't know that you're going to be able to get away with, hey, think about all the good times, a discount like that to keep him around. And I think you need to keep him around even if these young pitchers are pitching well. I mean, Verlander is clearly your ace. He is the guy that you trust more than anybody else in this rotation.
Justin Verlander, I don't want to say it's like he's not loyal. His teammates seem to love him, whatever. But if you remember, there was the little nugget from our John Granato last year that the other Astros players didn't want him to throw out the first pitch on opening day because he hadn't been involved. And when he was injured and rehabbing, he was in Florida and, you know, didn't hang out in the clubhouse, didn't come to the games. It's not that he's not loyal. I just think that Justin Verlander is going to look out for Justin Verlander. And to his credit, he doesn't really try to hide it. Like, I would rather him be like he is, which is honest about it, than say, well, I'm a team guy, Astros for life, blah, 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 and then see what he does behind the scenes.
Pitchers are interesting because pitchers aren't really in the team business. I feel like pitchers are so separated from the rest of a roster, and you kind of can see it where it's Verlander and him rehabbing essentially away from the team, not going to the World Series. I mean, that is something at the very least to raise an eyebrow at. Gerrit Cole essentially being a hired gun as soon as the 2019 World Series was over, putting on the Scott Boras hat. Pitchers are just different. I'm not going to hold this against him necessarily, but I definitely think that Verlander is not someone who is just so decidedly married to this place, to Houston, to the Astros, to Jim Crane, to the clubhouse around him. I mean, this is a very small thing, but also in that same availability, Vanessa, at the All-Star game where you just heard from Verlander, Verlander said that the Astros clubhouse had a debate the other week over who should win the American League MVP.
This is so wrong.
Verlander's vote went to Shohei Ohtani. Now, you could argue that it's because Ben Verlander, the baseball analyst, is the one that's been pushing it. Ben Verlander actually responded to it saying, yeah.
Proud brother. He said, proud brother.
But, I mean, you don't say that in a clubhouse where Yordan Alvarez is the other option for MVP. I'm sorry. I don't think it's a good look.
It's not a good look. I can't believe that he actually said that. I also can't believe he told the media about it. I didn't like this. I think that when you're on a team and when you have somebody as young and dominant as Yordan, you don't promote somebody on another team like that publicly. I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed, Paul, okay?
Yeah, right. Like the do's and don'ts stuff, that gets us into the unwritten rules territory. I mean, be honest. I am all about being honest. I would just say it's not advisable to say, like, yeah, go Shohei Ohtani. Who, by the way, I'm Shohei Ohtani. I'm the MVP. Shohei Ohtani wants you to think that he's a pitcher and a batter. If that's the case, why is he only batting in the All-Star game tomorrow? Because he won't pitch. Shohei Ohtani. Coward? This ad was paid for by Yordan Alvarez for MVP.
There you go. You want the Astros to get booed.
Yeah,
Dusty Baker
yes.
does not. Here's Dusty on how he hopes forgiveness is at the top of mind for those at Dodger Stadium. Sorry.
If they boo my players, I would prefer that this beautiful town of L.A. don't and kind of forget the past, because most of the players that are here weren't even there during the scandal. And I just wonder about the forgiveness of mankind.
I love that last part.
Forgiveness of mankind.
The forgiveness of mankind is something we should always think about. Also, I raise issue with the idea, like, oh, L.A., this beautiful city. off of Rodeo Drive, I don't know. I mean, Beverly Hills is nice. I love Beverly Hills. I think Beverly Hills is the bleeping you know what.
Yeah, but it's rich. I mean.
Well, yeah.
But
I mean, look, I'm a man of the people, except for if I had the opportunity to be a cake eater, I would gladly take it.
You'd be a cake eater.
I would sell out so fast.
I will say I'm in Santa Monica in a pretty good place, and there's an aggressive amount of homeless people outside of my
Dusty
hotel.
Dusty wasn't talking about them. Hey, Dusty, what are your thoughts on the homeless situation? 713.
Call in our show and let us know. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, a documentary came out.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Paul
I can't wait.
And watched part of it, part of the Derek Jeter documentary. And we want to ask you all, what defines an all-time great? Let us know. That's coming up.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
So I was actually excited when they announced that ESPN was going to do a Derek Jeter documentary. He's very, very private, doesn't expose a lot about his life, wasn't even on social media until he wanted to promote this documentary. Then I found out it was seven parts-ish. Seven parts. And I don't know. The only time that I think a 10-part documentary was even applicable was for the Michael Jordan one, the Bulls one. And that's because it went so in depth into different players, parts of the team, etc. Seven parts on Derek Jeter seems aggressive. Now, full disclosure, I did not watch it last night, but Paul, you did. And what are your thoughts?
I did. So I tweeted this out today. Derek Jeter is a great player. There's no denying that. He's one of the best hitters in terms of batting average that we've seen in recent memory. And he was a part of a team that won a lot, an extremely popular team. He's a lot like Troy Aikman, except for if Troy Aikman had longevity in his career, if Troy Aikman didn't suffer concussions and end up retiring early. He was a great player who was the centerpiece and leader of a great, extremely popular team. But he wasn't all-time great. He's not like one of the greatest players you've ever seen. Best of a generation? Sure. One of the best of a generation? Sure. You don't need a seven-part documentary to tell a story. And I thought to myself, Vanessa, as soon as we went into it, how are they going to stretch this to seven parts? And by the way, with a preview show on ESPN News before the documentary came out. So when this thing finally gets started at 10:45 Eastern time last night.
So they started it from part one?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
It was supposed to start at 9 Eastern, 8 our time. It started at 10:45 Eastern, 9:45
our time. So poorly planned. So poorly planned.
Not ideal. I get what they were trying to do. If you have the ESPN app, you can just stream it and you don't have to watch it with the commercials or anything like that. But, okay, I thought to myself, I will definitely dump on it along the way, I will try to give it a fair review. And here's the thing. It was boring. You know why? It began with just a lot of filler that no one cares about. Wow, Derek Jeter has parents? Unbelievable. I've never heard of someone having parents before. An athlete with parents. That's great. They were showing clips that weren't very spectacular from his high school career, like him lobbing a ball back to the mound after catching the third out or sliding into second base. There wasn't any new footage outside of him finding out that he had been drafted by the Yankees. we didn't really find out anything that new either, outside of the fact, and this was kind of interesting, that the Houston Astros came very, very close to drafting Derek Jeter with the first overall pick in 1992. Instead, they took Phil Nevin. Now, what's interesting about them taking Phil Nevin is that the guy who scouted Jeter, a two-time MVP, Hal Newhouser, who was an Astros scout, he retired because they didn't take Jeter first overall. He's like, if I can't convince anybody to take Jeter, then I don't want him. So anyway, I thought to myself, okay, but once we get to the 90s Yankees part, because the 90s Yankees were a terrifying team, and if Jeter's the center,
yeah, that'll be cool.
A story about them. You're right, Vanessa. If it's about the 90s Yankees, I think this is a good watch.
Well, yeah, but it's just Jeter.
It's about Jeter watching the 1995 Yankees in the playoffs. Here's what's crazy. Jeter didn't play.
Yeah, that doesn't sound appealing to me.
And the funny thing was, well, the highlights of the 1995 series between the Mariners and the Yankees was cool. But they kept on, instead of circling back to the games themselves, they kept circling back to Derek Jeter was the first guy off the bench to high-five people when they came in. But it's a series he didn't play in. I would have liked to just see the series that he didn't play in.
You think it would have been more interesting, because what it sounds like to me is if they did it about the 90s Yankees and the 2000s Yankees and included part of Derek Jeter in general.
Right. So go back to the Michael Jordan documentary.
Right.
Was it
always awesome.
All about Michael Jordan?
There was a whole episode about Scottie Pippen and Carmen Electra.
And Dennis Rodman and Carmen Electra.
That's what I meant.
There's a Scottie Pippen episode too, though. They built up the characters around him.
Yeah.
Now, maybe these characters around Derek Jeter aren't that compelling, but Jeter isn't really either. Jeter was pretty boring along the way. Like, he said one thing like, oh, I make doubters eat their words. Look at me. I'm Derek Jeter. Respect with a 2 instead of an S. Yeah.
Yeah, he's very vanilla. And that's why when I found out they were doing a documentary on him again, I'm like, okay, like, cool. I'll watch. Maybe it's 2 parts. 7 parts on one of the more boring personalities, especially when he's not going to get into the women that he dated, which is honestly the most impressive thing.
Gift basket time. Fast forward.
Gift baskets. I would watch a documentary about the gift baskets. I would watch a documentary breaking down how he gave women gift baskets, who he gave gift baskets to, who he deemed worthy of a gift basket exchange. But instead, he's out there talking about, like you said, his parents.
Right.
Fine. Whatever.
And they interviewed his parents. Cool. I don't care. I don't think many people care about that side of Derek Jeter. And look, if you're making a documentary, brevity is good. You're supposed to cut some things out. You could have cut out every single part of this. They felt the need to explain that Dave Winfield was Derek Jeter's favorite player growing up. Cool. Okay. It was sort of fascinating to learn things about Dave Winfield. But then all of a sudden, like, they're asking Dave Winfield, not about Dave Winfield. They're asking Winfield about Jeter. They're asking David Cone in 1995. Hey, do you remember when Derek Jeter came out of the dugout to give you a high five? Like, they made it so that every single memory was thinking about Derek Jeter instead of the things that those guys
that were happening.
Went through, the experiences that they went through. And to me, I don't know, that's a failure as a documentary. I'm going to watch the rest of it. I'm going to make fun of it on Twitter, but I will be objective with the way that I break this down.
Yeah.
And this whole first episode seemed completely pointless, you know, outside of learning that Derek Jeter, who was not good enough to play on the 1995 Yankee playoff team, was very good at giving guys high fives.
Love the high fives. What makes an all-time great, in your opinion? When you look at baseball players, or you could even categorize football, but what makes somebody an all-time great?
Well, I think that you have to put the fear of God into people that play against you. And that's a very subjective thing to describe. But I would just say that with Derek Jeter, I never really felt nervous as a guy who grew up a Red Sox fan about Jeter. I respected Jeter, respect. But I was never scared of him the same way that for a time I was scared of whenever Mariano Rivera, the closer of the Yankees, came into a game. The same way I was scared of Bernie Williams, the center fielder for that Yankees team. The same way I would say, at least in awe of the possibilities with guys like, say, less so Sammy Sosa, but with Mark McGwire but more specifically, Barry Bonds at the plate in the 90s, what Pedro Martinez did on the mound on a night-to-night basis. Jeter was a damn good player for a long period of time. Like, he's a Troy Aikman in the NFL, or for an Astros comparison, I mean, he's a more successful Craig Biggio. If he plays anywhere else and he wins 2 to 3 championships, if he's not on the New York Yankees, is he talked about in the same way? Same thing with Troy Aikman. If Troy Aikman, you know, plays for some other football team that's not the Dallas Cowboys and he wins a couple of Super Bowls, are we talking about him the same way that we talk about Troy Aikman today? So that to me, they're great players, but all-time great. Like, you have to be one of the best ever. Like, we're talking top five. We're talking Michael Jordan, and Jeter was just not that.
Yeah, the brand definitely helped Troy Aikman. I'm not probably going to watch this until you've watched it, because I want to know whether or not it's worth my time. And it sounds like it might not be. But what makes a player great? Do you believe championships matter in that conversation?
Yeah, and I mean, that's what helps with Jeter. And Jeter, right, of course, hit for average for his entire career. I think his career batting average is .310. But, all right, we're going to compare him to all-time greats. He ranked like 116th all-time in batting average, you know? And by the way, these are actual real names. This is very, very funny to me. Real names that have better batting averages in their career than Derek Jeter. Lefty O'Doul, Turkey Stearns.
That cannot be real.
Yes, it's a real name. Turkey Stearns. I looked it up. Mule Suttles.
That's a good one.
This is my favorite. Heine Manouche. Real baseball player. Cool Papa Bell, who I actually did know of before. He played in the Negro Leagues for a while. Pie Trainer. Goose Gosselin. Baby Doll Jacobson. Like, all of those guys had better averages than Derek Jeter over the course of his career. And Jeter was a great New York Yankee. You could celebrate him being a great New York Yankee. I feel like, though, the idea that he is an all-time great shortstop, I don't know. I feel like he was one of the best players of his era. I don't know that he's one of the best players of all time. I would not make that argument for him.
All right, Jeter documentary. Paul will be reviewing. Subscribe, rate, review, all that good things to Paul the movie critic, because he will be letting us know about this documentary. Coming up, we're talking about Soto's future, plus our world-famous segment, Yankees Watch. That's coming up next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner and College Football Hall of Fame, Mike Rozier, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, it is probably the best All-Star Weekend, Pro Bowl, etc., out of any of the major four sports. MLB All-Star Game happening tonight. Home Run Derby we saw last night. And one of the big topics was about one of the young studs, which is Juan Soto and his future. Dicey with the Nationals, to say the best, to say it best. He declined their offer. Some people were surprised by it. It is an insane amount of money to decline on paper, but maybe he doesn't want to play for the Walgreens team. Paul, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, look, I just get a little nervous when I hear that two teams that the Astros will be competing with are interested in his services. You know, it's one thing to take a look at some of the teams that might be in on him long term, but this was Buster Olney before the All-Star game talking about all of the potential destinations for Juan Soto if a deal is not reached by August 2nd, which it sounds like if he's turning down a 15-year, $450 million deal, I don't know what Atlanta's going to be able to offer.
And I spoke with general managers this morning who told me they believe that, yes, he is going to be traded unless he works out a deal in the next 15 days before this year's trade deadline. Number one, I've got the San Diego Padres. Very motivated. They have a need. They have a really good team, but they need offense. Number two, the Texas Rangers. Juan Soto is a Scott Boras client. Last winter, we saw them sign Corey Seager, Marcus Semien, Scott Boras clients, Kumar Rocker, drafted yesterday, another Boras client. You have the Yankees and the Dodgers, the usual suspects. We'll see if they're willing to step up and pay the price.
Ranger's an interesting one thrown in there.
Yeah, that's a really interesting one. I did not know Soto is a Boris client. Anytime I find out somebody's a Boris client, I'm like, okay, well, so it's like nowadays finding out when somebody has David Mulugeta, you know they're going to get out of their contract.
I want Juan Soto should have put on a Scott Boris hat after winning the home run derby, right?
Garrett Cole style.
Yeah, come on. Pull a Garrett Cole. And by the way, Garrett Cole wants Juan Soto. So,
ooh.
He wants the Yankees to go after him. He's like, yeah, I saw him firsthand. Oh, my God. It was something else. So, yeah, there you go.
So if the Astros are regularly facing both Julio Rodriguez and Juan Soto, how scared does that make you for Houston?
Look, I'm sorry, Vanessa, but we are pressing the button. We are introducing a new segment. It is called Mariners Watch after last night.
Really?
Mariners Watch.
A radio show host in Seattle called Paul Gallant.
2022. The day is Tuesday, July 19th.
I didn't know you really had one of these.
2022. I saw a colossus demigod take the world by storm. 81, 82 home runs, I don't even know. All I know is I saw the fear of God. It was right there in front of me. Death. Destruction. Julio Rodriguez. Look. There's a lot of season left. And yeah, the Astros have a 9-game lead on the Seattle Mariners. But this kid is different. It's like looking the time I looked at the Joker and saw an absolute menace. The time I saw the Riddler and saw an absolute menace. Julio Rodriguez is in the way, and I'm concerned.
That has been Mariners Watch.
I'm impressed. A couple of questions, if I may. So are you doing the voice because Seattle is grungy?
Yeah, and also I just love the song Something in the Way, and I figured I would just narrate it like I'm Robert Pattinson, emo Robert Pattinson in the Batman.
Because your Yankees watch, you're much more of a loud New York Yankee.
Yeah. You know, I'm like an obnoxious person from the Bronx who would probably like, you know.
You change vibes.
Right, exactly. You know, Yankee watch, you got to wear like a wife beater and act like you're, you know, very, very classy with your $20 chain that you're wearing in the outfield as you spill beer all over a small child. Where,
naturally.
You know, if you're a Mariners fan, like you're deep down, like depressed and hate everything. But now all of a sudden you finally see a symbol of hope.
A symbol of hope that can represent the city's sports interest from here on out. A man who can hit 82 home runs in one night. He's more than a man. He's a colossus of power.
Anyway, again, I'm done. I'm just saying.
No, I like it. I like it. I'm impressed. I'm impressed with the way that you were able to change vibes and go emo for grunge for Seattle. So it is concerning if the Astros are going to have to play both Juan Soto and Julio Rodriguez, and you're going to have two of the best young guns, the best, you know, hitters stacking up against the Astros.
Yeah, definitely. Look, they're going to be a challenge, and more of an annoying challenge. I don't think the Mariners are going to overtake the Astros. I still don't, even with all the games that they have left. I feel like the Astros have a pretty easy second half of the season. I think the big question, though, is just about, okay, well, now that this guy seems to have realized he's arrived, I wonder what that's going to be like, because I don't know. I mean, we've seen superstars on that team before, and I got to say, like, size-wise, power-wise, the way that he plays, there are eerie Ken Griffey Jr. similarities out there with this guy, and I feel like you can't really take a team like the Mariners seriously unless they have someone like that. And I know you're probably saying to yourself right now, well, what about the Los Angeles Angels? Yeah, that's true. I mean, the Angels have been a massive disappointment despite having the two MVP candidates that they have in Trout and Ohtani, and Syndergaard has been terrible. But look, the Mariners, I mean, they've won 14 in a row, and this guy is great. He's going to be something else.
Julio and Soto cleaned up last night. This is per Bob Nightingale. Rookie Julio Rodriguez earned more money, $750,000, by finishing runner-up in the home run derby than he will his entire salary this year, which is $700,000. Juan Soto, who's earning $17.1 million, gets a $1 million bonus as winner of the home run derby. Not bad.
No, that's pretty damn good. Jeez.
I actually did not know that they were going to get that much money for the home run derby. I feel like if you like are on the Pro Bowl for the NFL, you get like, oh, congrats, you were in the Pro Bowl. This is like some major incentive for guys to do the derby.
Yeah. And I mean, it kind of sucks that, you know, these guys who are on these, it's BS the way that baseball contracts are structured. Like, hey, you're incredible at age 21, at age 22, but you have to wait 6 more years to negotiate yourself a contract that pays you what you are playing for. Or what you are doing on the pays you based off of what you are doing on the field, like for both Soto and for Julio Rodriguez. And with Soto, it's a little different because I think Soto's arbitration options are pretty nice over the next couple of years. But yeah, Julio's making less than $1 million. Like if he won the home run derby, he would have won $1 million. It's messed up.
Jeff Passan actually had, you know, we don't see a lot of positivity from baseball writers. You talk about this a lot, Paul Gallant. But Jeff Passan had a tweet about before the home run derby. He asked Soto how he was feeling. Pretty good, said Soto. Then I asked if he's going to win the home run derby. Probably, he said. Jeff Passan said it's impossible to dislike Soto or Julio Rodriguez. Baseball is in great hands with its young stars.
To a degree. The baseball writers will always kiss the ass of the league in a way that they shouldn't.
Right.
Look, you have to find a way to make these guys everywhere. You have to. Baseball did, and sorry to keep on bringing things back to Seattle stuff. I'm just saying, with Ken Griffey Jr., didn't he always seem larger than life? You know, he was on all the video games. He had the backwards hat. Like,
oh, he invented, yeah, it seemed like the backwards hat.
And he was a goofy nerd. I mean, they did a very good job of marketing him. Sort of the same way that Tiger Woods was marketed extremely well. Like, Ken Griffey Jr. was not cool by any means, even though he came off as the coolest ever when he played the game. You got to find a way to do that with Soto. To do that with Julio Rodriguez, to do that with Shohei Ohtani. And with Ohtani, what they have done is they have just given you so much Ohtani that I think there's some fatigue, even though there shouldn't be with how good he's been. Baseball has just focused on Ohtani as opposed to like Soto. There isn't really, I think, enough love given to that guy. Again, he's playing on a Nationals team that sucks. I kind of get it. They were saying on the broadcast last night, like they just found out who Julio Rodriguez is, and that's just the big problem with this sport. Like, yes, the sport is in great hands because of the stars, but how do you show off that you have these stars that are just as compelling as stars in the NBA? You have to find a way to put these guys out in the open and to let them really like exude their personalities. And you know, when it comes to guys who speak a different language, that is something that I know for some people is an obstacle. With Shohei Ohtani, with Julio Rodriguez, I mean, I hate to say it like this, but you gotta work with those guys to say like, hey, like we want to Americanize you. Hopefully you're cool with that.
All right. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to break down the biggest sports stories of the day, continuing that plus our garbage time segment. A celebrity is single after her husband cheated, and I'm thinking Paul Gallant may shoot his shot. That's coming up next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real. Fun sports. Breaking down the Houston sports scene with V and Pauly G on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Pete Alonso takes the home run derby very seriously. Moments before taking the field yesterday, cameras captured him in full uniform, deadlifting 135 pounds, full uniform.
That's classic the polar bear.
I mean,
apparently that's his nickname, by the way, people. Polar bears are known to lift, you know, just deadlift.
Was this for show? What was the point of this? Was this, because I don't think it was supposed to be funny. Initially, I thought it was supposed to be funny. I think he actually did this to try to increase his chances of three-peating.
Yeah, it seems like it would actually fatigue you a little bit.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't seem like it works.
I don't think having a pump before you hit the home runs is going to help you, unless you're actually trying to, you know, show off for the ladies, right? who amongst us hasn't, you know, done a bunch of push-ups before going to the pool because you want to look a little bit more vascular or something like that?
Are you one of the guys that's like, you've done five and you're like, oh, 89. 90.
Oh, no, you don't do them in front of them. No, what you do in front of the opposite sex is not, or whatever sex that you might be into. What you do is when you are not near them, you do something that will make your muscles swollen for the time that you are there. I'm just talking about like, hey, if you can do something that makes your pecs a little bigger, do it. If you can do something that makes your arms a little bigger, do it. What's the harm in that?
Sean, do you do this?
Absolutely not.
Why?
What are you talking? I mean, I get what you're saying, but yeah, no, I don't do that. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
I let my personality do the talking.
Oh, yes, fake Lance McCullers Jr. Yes, I do the exercise that's supposed to make your breasts stay perky.
Oh.
It's like you put your, I'm doing it over Zoom. You do your like prayer hands and you like squeeze them together.
Okay.
And it lifts your boobs. Because I'm trying to be in it for the long haul with these things.
I do that one though.
Yeah. You do that one. Iran fired their soccer coach Dragan Skokic. I'm probably butchered that name, but then brought him back 6 days later after they couldn't find a replacement prior to the World Cup. This is kind of like the way Paul Gallant approaches dating. He thinks he can do better, and then when he realizes he can't, all of a sudden he's at Drift with a 7.5 on a Saturday night.
I like turtles. Hey, I run so far away. Am I right?
I joke.
Well, I just think it's awesome that Iran is flailing around like a bunch of idiots when it comes to soccer, because they are in the same group as the United States come World Cup time. We could use a couple of teams that, I don't know, suck so that we can get out of. Is this the group of death? I don't know. Who do we have? We have the Limeys, right? The English are in it.
It's the English, it's America, it's Iran, and it's Wales.
Wales, gotcha, okay.
A lot of rivalries in that.
I think I have no idea.
Big soccer show.
We should be better than Wales, right? We should be better.
The U.S. should finish in the top two in advance, but...
Yeah.
Also, is the Houston Texans running Iran's coaching search?
They should have hired Josh McCown.
Yeah, did Josh McCown not get an interview?
I can't believe it. He would have fit in so well in Iran, too.
Or Cully. Oh, imagine David Cully's friend.
Jack Easterby and Josh McCown running Iran soccer.
Yeah, Iran needs to change their culture. The best way to do it would be hiring a Christian preacher with no job experience.
Absolutely.
The Texans would never do that.
Is this the first time the Houston Texans and Iran have been compared?
Yes.
Probably, because on the outside, seems like two different cultures.
It seems like it.
Rock the Casbah. Rock the Casbah. I don't know if that's the...
I thought it was...
Rock the Casbah is about Iran, right?
Really?
Sharif don't like it?
Oh, I thought it was Rock the Cash Box, or is that was the commercial?
I used to. I think that was a commercial, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought that was what it was for real. I'm going to have to do some Googling on the song. An Eagles player got totally screwed. He got disqualified.
Devin Allen.
Yeah, this was ridiculous when you watch the video and you really break it down.
I'm so lost. So he's running in, I think, the 100-meter hurdles, and he gets out of the gate after the gun goes off. If you watch the slow motion replay, he's essentially moving at the exact same moment as everybody else. But since he left in essentially, I guess, 1/1000th of a second too early,
ridiculous,
even though the gun had gone off, he reacted too quickly to the gun. And these guys are real sticklers for the rules. That 1/1000th of a second was enough to draw the false start. So he got ejected, essentially. He got disqualified because of that.
When you watch the video and you break it down, it's completely egregious.
Yeah, it was a bummer. I feel bad for him.
I do, too. It's time for our world-famous segment we call Garbage Time.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage Time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
All right, I love Joel Embiid, and I love seeing him dance at a wedding. He's dancing, is it called the Hora?
Yes.
On social media, he looks like he's having a lot of fun. He's joyfully smiling, and this is what dreams are made of.
Have you been to a Jewish wedding before, Vanessa?
I have not. Is this the Hava, Mikula Hava, Mikula?
I think so. I think okay. This is the early stages of it that you see online. Okay. Whatever the case is, if you've ever been to a Jewish wedding, you will never forget it. Because that part is awesome. And then the bride and the groom get lifted up on chairs and like carried around the room and stuff.
Oh.
I gotta say, like, there are things that weddings, whether they be Christian or worse, and I can say this because I am a recovering Catholic. Catholic weddings, which are just drag out for like an hour and 15 minutes.
And there's a lot of sitting and standing and sitting and standing, and I don't understand it because I'm not Catholic.
Especially,
don't forget the kneeling.
Yeah, the kneeling too.
Yeah,
don't forget about that. Yeah, you don't realize that you've just been doing this like habitually for no reason at all until you go back to it after not having been for a while.
But when I went to my first wedding, Catholic wedding, when I was supposed to say, and with your spirit, I just said, thank you.
Yeah, it used to be peace be with you. Yeah, or and also with you or something like that. Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, we should appropriate that part of the Jewish wedding. would Jewish people be mad at us if we took that? Because it's sick. Is it only, is that only allowed at a Jewish wedding? Because it's awesome, really. It's the coolest thing that any wedding has ever had. One of my friends, who his wife is Jewish, he was Protestant. They had a half and half wedding, and they had all the fun parts from the Jewish wedding, like the breaking of the glass and all that stuff too. Like, it was sick. Sorry,
right, but they were Jewish, right?
Yeah, his wife is Jewish. Yes,
that seems fun.
It's so fun. I'm happy for Joel Embiid. He looked like he was having the time of his life.
Emily Ruchtowski is getting a divorce after finding out her husband and the father of her child cheated on her. Paul Gallant, now is your time.
How do I play this one? Sup? Slide in the DMs?
Slide in.
First, you do a couple push-ups.
Yes, thank you. Maybe a couple pull-ups, too. I don't know if she's going to be that interested in a 33-year-old pasty white man with a graying beard and graying hair.
Oh, the gray works on you.
And a cat. But Emily, I'm available, I guess, if you want to.
And you would not
bring me into the family.
You would not cheat on her.
Oh
my God, Paul!
I don't know. I mean, listen, nothing would be guaranteed if we were to go on a date. What?
Maybe Giselle walks in and you go home with her. How do you get better than Emily Ruchtowski?
Well, listen, I don't know, but there's always someone out there. That's why this guy cheated on her, right?
You're like the Justin Verlander of dating. You're so noncommittal, and you always have a better option.
Speaking of better options, Tristan Thompson, who is expecting his second child with Khloe Kardashian via surrogate, was seen holding hands with a young honey in Greece.
Oh. What? Wait a second. Why are they still together?
You're invested in this. I know you don't want to admit it, but you're invested in this.
I am. Why are they still together?
I don't know.
I guess that
I think she has issues.
Is it just for the kid, like, that they're going to have? Like, the guy bangs everything that moves.
Right.
Like, I don't know. And she always, like, plays up like, oh, I'm so sad. Then how about stop dating, like, NBA players who are literally having sex with everyone, like Lamar Odom.
How about just start with literally this NBA player? You can date another one.
Yeah,
just Tristan Thompson.
Good point.
Well, her last one was didn't he have some, Lamar had some substance issues.
Yes, Lamar Odom had a lot of issues.
He did.
Understatement.
Would you date Khloe Kardashian?
No.
Not your type?
No. No.
Even for all of the fame and money and influencing that would come with it?
No, I couldn't, there's only one of them that I feel like I could tolerate.
Which one?
And even then I would be like, oh, this is gonna be terrible, isn't it? Because I'm gonna be forced into the show as part of a plot line. Like, that's the only reason Kanye even got brought into the mix, right?
I'd love to be on that show. Don't even. What are you talking
about? Which one is it, Paul?
That's a conversation for another day. We're out of time.
Oh, God.
We're out of time.
All right.
It looks like.
Coming up next, you got.
Can't have Emily hearing this in the same segment. Come on.
Jeremy Branham, Joe Blank, the Killer Bees are with you from 12 to 3 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Have a good day, guys.
Peace.
ESPN 97.5.